The Lord be with you.
In high school, I had two best friends, Aaron and Randy. There's a picture of the three of us there. I'm the one in the middle, yeah. And for those of you who've been here a while, you've heard me preach many a sermon about the hijinks I got up to with these guys. But say you're new to Faith Lutheran, let me tell you a little bit. So the three of us were inseparable in high school. We were called the Three Musketeers. We did almost everything together. We were so interconnected that there was one teacher who, after having us in class for 2 years, could not keep straight which of us was Aaron and which of us was Ben. And that was just fine by us because by our senior year, we didn't really take school very seriously. I should say Aaron and Randy didn't take school very seriously. I have always been a goody-two-shoes. But honestly, they were just bored. They were bored by the classes that were too easy for them, with one exception, AP US History, which was taught by Liz Cahill, and I've got a picture of Miss Cahill here. Miss Cahill was a former Air Force intelligence officer, and she ran US AP History like a boot camp. She demanded a lot from her students, and she got a lot from her students. Now, Aaron in particular was known for what we politely call a lot of BS. Yeah, he was skilled at the verbal arts. And he turned in his first essay to Miss Cahill, and when he got it back, the first paragraph just had a giant red X through it and a note that said, irrelevant. She called him out on his BS, and Aaron respected her for it. So this is Miss Cahill. The last semester of our senior year, we go into her class, and Miss Cahill is in an icy rage. We all sit down, and she looks out at the class, but in particular, she looks first at Aaron, and then at Randy, and then at me, and she says, I have learned that on recent tests, some of you are cheating. Now today in 2 Samuel chapter 11, we hear that King David cheats. King David cheats not in school, but in his marriage. He goes up to the roof of his house, a palace, and he sees a woman who's taking a bath. She's undergoing the ritual purification that Jewish women are supposed to go through when they have their period each month. And you may think to yourself, well, that's kind of odd. Why would she do it on her roof? But you have to remember, this is an ancient city before cars. And before cars, cities could only be built so big because you had to be able to walk to everywhere in the city. Houses were very close together, which means if you wanted more than one room, you built up. Most Jewish homes were essentially two stories. You have a ground floor where you keep your animals. You have a second floor, which is where people kind of lived, had their living rooms, where they slept. But then if you wanted some privacy from all that, you would go up on the roof. And maybe there would be some partitions or something to give you privacy from your neighbors. But Jerusalem is built on a mountain, and the king's palace is at the very top of the hill. And so from David's roof, he can see into everyone else's home. He sees this woman bathing, and he thinks to himself, that woman is beautiful. Who is she? He asks around, and his servants tell him, well, that's Bathsheba, and she's married to one of your soldiers, a man named Uriah. Well, David says, what's the problem? Uriah's off fighting a war for me. He's not here. And so he commands. He commands that his servants bring him Bathsheba, and he sleeps with her. And I wonder if David even realizes that what he's doing is wrong. I say that because David's married, sure, but he's married to 8 wives plus concubines. This is a man for whom collecting more women is just daily activity, yeah? He's also the king. He has the power of life and death over everyone in his kingdom, which means no one says no to him. His servants aren't going to say no to him. Bathsheba isn't going to feel like she has the power to say no to him, because if she does, her life and that of her husband will be on the line. It must have been so easy for David, so simple, that part of me even wonders if he realized in that moment that what he was doing is wrong. I say that because it turns out that someone had been cheating in AP US history. It turns out that the people had been cheating were my best friends, Aaron and Randy, unbeknownst to me. But I'm not sure it fully registered to them that they were cheating. Because here's the thing, we didn't have every class together. Aaron and Randy are very talented musicians, I am not. They took honors choir in high school, I did not. And in that honors choir class, there was another student who had an older sibling who had taken this same course the previous year. And that student mentioned that she still had her older sister's tests from previous years, and Aaron and Randy asked if they could look at the tests. Now, here's the thing. In college, looking at previous tests from classes is a pretty standard way to study. It's one of the perks of being in a fraternity or a sorority, right? It's what a teacher's asked for usually for this class. Now, usually college professors will change their test each year, so the best you kind of get is a general sense of what the teacher might ask. Miss Cahill did not change her tests. They were exactly the same. Now, Aaron and Randy, they weren't looking at the previous tests and just memorizing all the answers. They were looking at the previous tests because they wanted to know what maps to study. They weren't super great at geography, and so they said, okay, this is going to be a map of South Carolina. I'll go study South Carolina. And they'd give the test back. It was something they'd do for a minute every now and then in their choir class, and I think in their mind it was such a simple and easy thing, it didn't even register to them as a problem, because they didn't even bother to let me in on this deal, yeah? For David and for Aaron and Randy, what they were doing seemed like it wouldn't cause any problems until there was a chance that they might get caught. Because you see, Bathsheba sends a message to David saying, hey, guess what? I'm pregnant, and my husband's been at war. Now, David starts to get nervous, but he's got a plan. This doesn't need to be found out. What he does is he writes to the general Joab and says, send me Uriah. I want to talk to him. So Uriah comes back from the battlefront, and David says, you know, I'd like to hear how things are going. Wow, it sounds like it's been real hard for you fighting this war for me. Why don't you take some R&R, go home, be with your wife? Because, you know, if you were to sleep with her, well, maybe in 9 months or eight, you know, math is a little fuzzy, you'll have a baby. How great would that be? Except Uriah refuses. Uriah refuses not because there's anything legally wrong with it, but Uriah has a deeper sense of morality. Uriah says, wait a minute. My brothers in arms aren't relaxing in their homes with their wives. They're out on the battlefield sleeping in tents. My general Joab is out on the battlefield sleeping in tents. Even the Ark of the Covenant is out on the battlefield in a tent. I can't let them be out there suffering while I just relax and enjoy myself with my wife. To which David says, ooh, you know, yes, it would be wrong to enjoy yourself with your wife while all those men are fighting a war for you, wouldn't it? Tell you what, why don't you stay another day, Uriah? I'm going to throw a feast for you because you're such a great guy. And at this feast, David gets Uriah drunk, on the assumption that when Uriah is drunk, his morality may decrease and maybe he'll make some different choices. Uriah's morality doesn't decrease. Well, maybe slightly. Instead of sleeping out with the servants like he did the previous night, this time Uriah passes out on the king's couch. Yeah. But this means David has a problem. Uriah hasn't gone to see his wife. And so David comes up with a plan to cover up his mess. To cover up his mess, David writes instructions to the general Joab, instructions ordering the general Joab to send Uriah to the very front lines to put him as close as possible to the enemy walls where there are archers who might shoot him, and then to pull back and abandon him there. And whatever happens, happens. And the icing on this cake is David says, you know what, Uriah is just such an upstanding, trustworthy guy. I bet I could have him deliver these instructions to the general, and he'd never even read them. And sure enough, Uriah doesn't. The general Joab reads them. Uriah is sent to the front and abandoned there, and a woman looks over the edge and drops a rock on his head. He dies. In trying to cover up his mistake, King David makes matters worse. That day in USAP history, when Miss Cahill accused people in our class of cheating, she said, "I'm going to give the cheaters a chance to come forward right now." No one came forward. Yeah. We sat there in silence. You know, she's got all the intensity of a drill sergeant just staring each of us down. And she says, "I have good information about who cheated. And I have written letters of recommendations to college for the people who cheated." She wrote a letter of recommendation for me. She says, "If you don't come forward, I'm going to write to those colleges and tell them not to accept you on grounds of academic dishonesty." And then she looked at Aaron, and then she looked at Randy, and then she looked at me. Because we're the three musketeers, we're inseparable. Whatever Aaron and Randy do, you better believe Ben's doing, right? Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 5 that there is more than one way to kill a man. Jesus says that if you insult someone, if you call someone, you fool. Literally in Greek, the word is moron. Did you know a Greek word, moron? It means fool. Jesus says you're as liable to the hell of fire as if you had killed a person. Because you see, for Jesus, sin isn't just what's written on a piece of paper. Sin is the state of your heart. If sin is what's written on a piece of paper, we can all find loopholes to get around that. Aaron and Randy and I are masters at that sort of thing. But if sin is the state of your heart, there's no getting around the truth of what's in your heart. And the truth is, if you are willing to let someone else suffer and die to cover up your mistake, it means you're willing to murder them. Aaron and Randy sat in that high school classroom, ready to kill my chances of going to college, ready to kill my reputation in order to cover up their mess, just like David was willing to kill a good and honest soldier in order to cover up his mess. And here's the thing. David gets away with it. He gets away with it. Uriah dies. No one's the wiser. No one's the wiser except for God. Because the very end of 2 Samuel chapter 11, after David has covered up his adultery, has covered up this murder, it says God was displeased with David. And in the next chapter, God sends the prophet Nathan to talk to David and call him out on his BS. Nathan tells David, not only does God know what David has done, but there's going to be consequences for David's action. And the main consequence is that this child that David has made with Bathsheba will die, which seems incredibly unfair. But here's the truth of the matter. When we try to cover up our sin, we make matters worse. We make matters worse not just for ourselves, but everyone around us. When we cheat and when we lie, even if people don't know about it, our relationships become worse with the people around us because now there is something blocking our heart from the people around us. There is a lie, a secret that we are keeping hid. And what that means is we can't be fully present to someone else. We can't be fully honest with them. We have to always hold something back. Aaron and Randy might have been able to get away with this. They could have chosen to not come forward, And maybe Miss Cahill wouldn't have had enough proof to pin it on them. Or maybe she would have pinned it on us anyway, and I would have suffered for it. And even if I never found out that Aaron and Randy had actually cheated, our relationship would never be the same. Because Aaron and Randy would know that when push came to shove, they were willing to sacrifice me to cover up their sin. And so Jesus offers us a better option. Jesus says, so when you are bringing your gift to the altar, if you know that someone has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and first go and be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come back and make your offering. You see, Jesus tells us we have a better option than trying to cover up our mistakes. We can come clean, and we can reconcile with the people that we have wronged. And now it's really important to understand that there is a difference between reconciliation and forgiveness. Forgiveness is what we do when someone has wronged us. When something has done something to hurt us, we can say, I forgive you, which means I'm going to let go of my anger towards you. I'm not going to let what you did in the past define who I am now, because I want to move on. But forgiveness is not the same thing as reconciliation. Reconciliation is making it right. Whatever was wrong is addressing it and restoring it so that the relationship can be whole again. And Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 that reconciliation is not the job of the person who has been harmed. Reconciliation is the job of the person who has done the harming. That when you have hurt someone else, it is your job to go to that person and say, I was wrong. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. Here's how I'm going to fix it. Will you please forgive me? And what Jesus promises us is that we can always be reconciled, at least to God. That God is always eager to restore the relationship we have with God. That's not to say there won't be consequences, because you see, when God calls out David on his sin, David confesses what he has done wrong. He apologizes. But there's still going to be consequences to his actions. The child still dies. General Joab begins to lose respect for David and will eventually betray him. But the relationship with God remains intact. It can start again. And what Jesus tells us is that the consequences of our confessing are always better than the consequences of us trying to cover up our sin. On that day, back in high school, the bell finally rang, and we all left. I left angry because I had been falsely accused, and I felt like my future was in jeopardy. So I didn't pay attention to anything else in that moment. What I heard later is Aaron and Randy also left that class, but in the hallway they had a very rapid, very heated conversation about what to do. And what they realized they needed to do was to walk back into that classroom. They confessed to Miss Cahill. They came clean about how they had been cheating by looking at old tests. And so Miss Cahill gave them both Fs. She failed them. But Aaron and Randy didn't fail me. They told Miss Cahill it was just the two of us. No one else was involved. Ben didn't have anything to do with this. And because of that, Aaron and Randy and I are friends to this day. We make a point once a year getting together, and now we all have kids and our kids play together. And this is what I will say about Aaron and Randy. In a world where everyone makes mistakes and our world is continually made worse because people try to cover up their mistakes, these two men own up to theirs. They come clean when they screw up. Not only are they better for it, I, as their friend, am better for it. and I am so proud that my daughter is being raised knowing them. And as happy as it is for me to be able to share with you a story of reconciliation today, the truth is, reconciliation doesn't always happen, at least not in this life. But here's the thing, relationships never truly end, not even because of death. In Christ, even the dead are alive, and in Christ they hear our prayers, which means it is never too late to say that we are sorry to someone. It is never too late to come clean. It is never too late to ask for forgiveness for something that we have done wrong. They hear us. And someday those relationships will be restored, even if we can't see it in this moment. I want to say that the story doesn't quite end here, because though Ms. Cahill failed Aaron and Randy, when they got their final transcripts after graduation and they sent those on to college, they looked at those transcripts and they saw under US AP History that their F's had turned into D's. There's just a little bit of grace for them. And I think that's because even though they had failed, they spent the rest of the semester working hard in that class. They respected Ms. Cahill. She made history fun and called them to be better people. And they wanted to be better people. And so they did all the work, even though they knew they were going to fail, and she honored that by giving them a D at the very end. Aaron and I have kept in contact with Ms. Cahill over the years, and last year, after she had retired for a while, Ms. Cahill decided she had a new calling, no longer to teach U.S. history to high schoolers, but to be an Episcopal priest, and she is now ordained. It is now no longer just the high school students into which she puts the fear of God and the promise of Christ's forgiveness. Now, every week in the Divine Liturgy, she proclaims that if we try to cover up our mistakes, we just make matters worse. But she also proclaims Christ's promise that when we come clean, we can become better. Amen.